Blog Talk Radio. Good evening and welcome. Thank you for tuning in on today. I hope everyone had a great weekend. Please call someone, text someone, tweet someone, and let them know that we are on the air live. You are listening to Victory Against All Odds right here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Evangelist Benton, and I just want to say thank you again for joining me on this evening. I would like to say for those who have not, who are joining me for the first time, that you are listening to Victory Against All Odds, a radio talk show for the family, where we talk about some of the struggles and the obstacles that families face as it relates to issues of child abuse, depression, domestic violence, substance abuse, and suicide and sexual abuse. And we also include the residue that flows from the issues of life concerning these matters. Again, thank you for joining me this evening. It is June the 25th, 2012, and it is 7:37 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So let's talk. You may contact me or write me, Victory Against All Odds, P.O. Box 26531, Raleigh, North Carolina, 27611. Again, that's Victory Against All Odds, P.O. Box 26531. You can send your concerns, prayer requests, love offerings, whatever you would like to do, whatever you want to send, is send it to that P.O. Box, and I will retrieve it. My email address is odds_against_U@yahoo.com. Again, that's odds_against_U@yahoo.com. Please email me if you have any questions, concerns, or if you need assistance, if you know someone who is dealing with the thoughts of suicide or someone who is contemplating suicide or anything that is closely related, you may email me in the subject box. Simply put capital letters VAAO, and I will respond accordingly. You may also, if you have prayer requests or other concerns and you would like to call me, you may do so at 641-715-3900. Again, that's 641-715-3900, extension 343-658#, and leave a detailed, extensive message on my confidential voicemail line, and I will contact you. Thank you for joining me again. As we continue our series on an epidemic in America, on last week, we talked about the famous Don Cornelius, who we all know by now, died earlier this year, February, by means of suicide. And we went on and discussed about how it came to be that way, as we have been discussing in our series, that he went through a succession of events, one being a divorce from his wife, and then being diagnosed with a terminal illness, and just being in so much pain and having a series of serious surgeries, one behind the other, and then, of course, having to deal with issues of domestic violence, and it was just a bit too much. So we continue to lift his family up in prayer. On last week, we talked about clarifying what the problem is as we identified some of the deeper problems and we dug in the dirt. Again, we said dirt represents, the D stands for danger. The greater the danger in the attempt, the higher the current level of risk that suicide is going to occur. I stands for impression, which is the degree of risk. R stands for rescue. That is if the chances are good that that person would rescue or if he or she would assist in their own rescue in any way. And T stands for timing. The more recent the attempt, the higher the occurrence, the current risk level of suicide or suicide attempt. And so, again, one of your main weapons here is going to be your weapon of discernment. So as we move forward, and I just encourage you to go back and listen to parts 1, 2, and 3. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time reviewing. We're going to move right on so we can get through. Today, one of the other things that we talked about was that, and I needed to say this so that we can go on, that this person has a plan, and we talked about asking the right questions to figure out how much plan is in place. So once we have determined whether the plan that is in place is risk high or risk low, then that means we need to also have a plan. Because if they've got a plan, we've got to have a plan that counteracts their plan. So today we're going to talk about how to formulate a plan to help the caller. So, like I said, it's important to find out what part of the plan the caller has put into action, and then we need to help that person reverse his or her course of action. That is the objective here. If the person has turned on the gas, for example, and they've closed the windows and they've sealed off all the doors, what is our plan? Our plan is simply to get that caller to reverse that, turn the gas off, open up the windows. Let's get some circulation going. You know, we've got to get some air in there. And the most important thing about that is you do not let that person off the phone until they have done exactly what you have requested. So do not let that person promise to do it when you hang up. You stay on the phone while they are turning off the gas and opening up that window. Or if that person has a gun, then you need to find out if that gun is loaded or unloaded. If the gun is unloaded, the risk is a little bit lower because then they've got to take the time out to figure out to load the gun. But then your next informational piece is, do they have bullets or do they have to go get the bullets? But if they have a gun and the gun is loaded, then we know that the risk is high, and then we need to do whatever it takes to get that person not to pull the trigger. Same thing if they've got pills. We need to know if the pills are in their hand, and our objective, our plan, is to get them to flush those pills. So we've built trust, and again, you know, we've got to be able to build that relationship. So once you have built this trust relationship, then we need to get a commitment from that person. We need to make sure that we can get them to commit to not doing anything that would cause them to harm themselves or anything that would cause them to take their life. So we need to ask that person to promise that they would call you if they have any other difficulties or anything that would cause them to be tempted to take their life. That is a commitment. That is part of the plan of action. Okay, so now we need to determine positive resources and alternatives, because now we have gotten them to commit to turning off the gas, to flushing the pills, to not pulling the trigger, or if they don't have the gun loaded, to put the gun away. So Now what? Now we need to determine some positive resources and some alternatives. That is the next part of the plan that we should have. So now we need to help that person determine positive resources and alternatives. So if the person has committed himself or herself to the agreement with you not to do anything, then we need to help that person widen their alternatives, widen their resources. Okay? We need to make sure that we make sure that that person don't lose sight of the fact that they have options. Remember, the ultimate goal here is to give this person some hope. They are hopeless. So our job in all the midst of all of this at the same time is to restore some hope. Okay, so now that we have kind of determined that we're going to get some resources, we got to assure him or her that by working together, that the two of you can discover what those alternatives are. So make it personal. Say something like, tell that person that you'll see them tomorrow at 11 o'clock and make sure you be there. So remember, you have established some trust with this person. So now your plan of action is to make sure that you make a statement that lets that person know that you care. Remember, the most important word is hope. Or help, actually. The most important word is help. They are looking for help. So they have figured out, or they have decided that they have no options. In their psychache, remember we talked about psychache, in their psychache, they have no help. They are hurting. So we are to restore hope. Let them know that there is help. And that you are available, that you have made a commitment to them. Okay, so now we need to create a committed environment. If this person is someone that you can get to, that you can physically see or you can physically get to, you need to come up with a, I guess we could call it an anti-suicide agreement, something of that nature. So, we're going to create an environment that feels safe. And then when you see this person, we need to probably have this person sign an anti-suicide agreement. So this is like a type of counseling, and it's important that you convey to that person that you care and that you are committed. And by doing so, not only have you committed to them, they have committed to you. That is the most important piece in terms of just creating that environment and making sure that you offer some resources and some alternatives. Okay, now. Let's talk about, remember we're talking about communication here. So now we need to communicate in our plan. So we need to communicate our intentions. What is our intent? We've made a commitment. We have a plan. So what is the plan? What are your intentions? I can hear you saying, well, I don't know. I've never done anything like this before. I'm not qualified. I don't know if I can follow this through. I've never been in this particular situation. That's why we're here. I'm giving you some tools. Okay. So now we're going to communicate what our intentions are. We need to have three elements in place in order to do that, especially if this is by phone and you can't get to this person. First one is going to be activity. The person needs to feel that someone is something is being done for him or her right now. Tomorrow is too late. Guess what? 3 hours is too late right now. We need to make that person feel like there is something that can be done right now. This assurance can relieve his or her tension. Remember, this is, you know, they're stressed. The second one is authority. You as the person of help, the counselor, the person that's helping, whatever role you're going to play and whatever you decide you want to call yourself, you must set him or her up as an authoritative figure who will take charge. So you need to make sure that you take charge, that you become the authoritative figure and that you take charge, because the caller is not capable of taking charge of his or her life at that time. They are vulnerable. They're just wanting that psych ache to end. I'm going to say that again. All they want is the psych ache to end. That's all. Remember, it is an exaggerated thought. So they just need it to shut off. You take charge so that you can assist them, so that we can come to the conclusion that we can end the psych ache in their head, in their mind. And the third one is involvement of others. So now we've got them to shut off the gas. We've got them to put the gun away. We've got them to flush the pills. Now that person feels like you are there for them. Okay? So if the caller realizes that the other is now involved in caring for him or her, that person will be more apt to feel that the care and the concern, and they will more likely to respond. They're going to respond because they feel. Remember, this is feelings. We are tapping into the feelings. And we have our weapon of discernment. So, again, we are involving others. So now this person will be more apt to feel and care and concern and will be more likely to respond. So in order to be the best possible help for this particular person, this caller, then we need an outline, some barriers to communicate with this person who is contemplating suicide. Well, Evangelist Benson, what kind of barriers are you talking about? What do you mean by that? Okay, let's talk about that. Okay, anxiety is number one on the part of the listener that makes him or her uncomfortable and less of a listener. So these are the barriers to communicate with the person that is contemplating suicide. These are the barriers. Denying the significance or the meaning of previous suicidal behaviors that the caller has made totally clear or the listener has failed to determine. Number three, rationalizing verbal and nonverbal suicidal clues. This is like saying to oneself, this is what the person really means. You know, something like that, rationalizing those verbal and nonverbal suicidal clues. These are barriers. Number four is an aggressive reaction to suicidal hints and or threats. Excuse me for just a minute. Uh-oh. I am being distracted. Hold on. I'm sorry about that. Okay, number five is going to be fear. Remember, fear is going to be one of the main roots that we're pulling up out of the dirt. Fear, of course, we all have fear, and we know that fear just immobilizes us. It just grips us and causes us to be feeling helpless. That's that word again, helpless. So fear, which mobilizes the helper and prevents that person from really talking about that situation. So it could also be fear of becoming too involved with the responsibility demanded by the other person. The last one is manipulating a suicidal person who has cried wolf too many times and is no longer listened to by others. So these, again, are the barriers. Okay, so we're going to move on. Now we're going to talk about encouraging survivors to find continuous support, okay? Because we've come up with a plan, and we've let that person know that we're there, that they've made an agreement. So now we need to find a continuous plan, and encourage them to have a continuous plan. Okay. Okay. So in order to do this, we need to know what does that survivor or of a family who has experienced suicide contemplate. You know, we've got to listen to their story. Remember, we've gotten information, you know, the entire time that this person is talking and we're listening without interruption as much as possible, we are gathering information. So by now, after all that we've gone through and all that we've talked about, we have enough information that we should be able to gather some continuous support, whether that be support in their family, friend, church, professional community. We need to have some continuous support. We need to make sure that they have continuous support. Let's see. If this person is contemplating suicide because they're grieving, you know, there are various reasons that set people off. They're grieving. Because of loss. Remember, we've got the continuous support, basically what I'm trying to say here, is going to be based off what those situations, circumstances So based on the root, the dirt, we dug in the dirt, and based on the root of the problem, we'll kind of lead you to that continuous support based in that particular area. So I said that because I need to pick something. So I think grief is kind of easy because it has layers, and that's kind of, you can kind of relate. I think you can relate to this. If the person is at a loss because they're suffering from grieving, that's what I'm trying to say, then there are other issues and other roots that go with that. Loss of income, loss of a companion or a child, whether it be, you know, if it's a companion, then it would be loss of income, loss of a companion, you know, various other roots that go along with that. So we would need to find a support group for this person who has contemplated suicide. And, of course, the first one is very obvious, and that would be a support group for survivors of suicide. And then, of course, remember, when we do that, we need to make sure that we find one that they would be comfortable with, and possibly you being there for them, then you would also need to be part of that intervention for this person. Even when it is acknowledged a suicidal powerful effect of those in a when we intervene and get that person support, we need to make sure that it fits that person, and that, remember, they've made an agreement with you. So we just need to make sure that that person follows through with hooking up with a support group that is going to allow them to talk things out, continue to uncover those roots, pull up those roots, and then engage their family, their community, those things, those groups, those people that make them feel like they belong, that will encourage them, that will give them hope, that they feel, look, remember we talked about the things that were lacking, their autonomy, their love, you know. So those are the support groups. So we need to make sure those things are included when we start looking for alternatives, as well as when we continue to find continuous support. So when you find a support group, then make sure that you have kind of checked out behind the scenes that this particular support group will work for them. Don't just throw them off to the support group and don't check on them. Always make sure that you do some follow-up. You want to make sure that that person realizes that you care. Remember, because they feel like that nobody has listened to them up to this point, and they are crying out for help. Okay. So in the support group, we want to just make sure that their needs are being met, that people are responding. And remember, there is a way in which we do that, in which others do that. They need to make sure that they listen carefully to their questions, and then that they answer those questions truthfully. They need to be open about talking about that person, and we can still talk about grieving, that person who died, if there were children involved, whether the children need to be told or whether the children have been told. So now guess what? The children also need some support. And, of course, that person who is contemplating suicide may not be able to meet the needs of the children. So you need to make sure that the needs of the children are met as well. Encourage the children to share their feelings and questions with those that they trust, and then you got to teach them to be selective about sharing the facts of the suicide, okay? They need to be able to grieve, and children grieve better when they see adults grieve. So when they see adults cry, that helps them to get their emotions out as well. Then we need to be sensitive to some of the possible feelings of guilt, and you'll know what that is based on listening, because you've listened to the story, how did they get there. So use your tools, your tool of discernment, and, if you use your tool of discernment, it will guide you, it lead you in the way that you should go. Yes. All right. So be sure to discuss the constructive ways of handling problems, because now we've got to put that structure back in place so that we don't go down this road. Again, we need to give them some structure, give them foundation, build a framework. That's a good word right there. They need to hear that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem, and problems can be solved. They need to know that problems can be solved, and that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary situation. And let's see what time I got here. Okay. I'm doing good. I got 25 minutes. Okay. Which is going to be good, because I think I'm going to be able to conclude this series and I open up my lines for response. So now that we have got the family involved, the children are involved, and we've just pulled out one example, and I'm just using suicide. Then we've got to consider the impact of suicide on the remaining family members, okay? It has been determined that when someone commits suicide, it increases the chance of the persons that are attached to them, that are close, it increases the chance of suicide as well. And I'm just throwing that statistic out there. I just recently learned that myself. So, again, what I just said was that when someone commits suicide, it increases the chance of those that are close to them to commit suicide as well. And you ask me why. Why do you think? No, it's not guilt. That is not the answer. It is because it is deemed as acceptable. It is an acceptable behavior. So that's why there is an increase or a increase in chance of others following suit. So that's why it is very important that you intervene as quickly as possible and pull the roots up as quickly as possible and communicate as quickly as possible and have a plan as quickly as possible. Just as a suicide can be devastating to individual, it impacts the family. It really does. The complex web that includes brothers and sisters and parents and friends and uncles and aunts and cousins can be monumental. Suicide can tear a family apart by the guilt and the blame, especially if it is successful. So, and we know that it can be successful. It tears a family apart. I can only imagine what Don Cornelius' family is going through. Other families let me back up. In addition to it tearing families apart, it can also bring families together. And the reason I say that is because obviously there's no communication going on, so it may cause people to start talking. It draws them together, because they need to rally support one for another as they struggle through their individuality and collective grief and confusion, because we know that suicide brings about confusion. Other family members may continue in silence. They may pretend, maybe pretending as best they can that nothing has happened. And what does that sound like to you? Denial, right? So we need to pull up that root too. Or that the suicide was an accidental death. They may conjure in their mind, instead of dealing with the word suicide, they may conjure in their mind that it was just an accident. And they can relate a little better. It takes the guilt out. It takes the blame out. But we need to deal with it head on. We need to pull that root up. And then we need to tackle all the other extensions from the main root. Because, you know, when we pull up roots out the ground, it's got branches that go along with it. So we need to make sure we uncover all of it and we kill the whole thing. Okay. So those are just some of the things that I wanted to talk about as I kind of begin to close this series down and just kind of bring it in. I'm trying to think, is there anything else I want to say about that as we talk about families and how the family responds? We know that when, as far as family is concerned, when someone commits suicide, if it's a child, you know, a child meaning a teenager, and we have heard an increase of children who are being bullied committing suicide. So, of course, this leaves the parents wondering what they did wrong. What did they miss? Were they too strict, or were they not strict enough, or, you know, were they too attentive or not attentive enough? And, of course, this goes with you, because even as, you know, you get older, or even children who are adults, you know, that leaves their parents wondering too. So let's just say it's, you know, if Don Cornelius' parents are living, you know, his parents are dealing with, you know, the consequences of their son's death, you know. So we just need to deal with all of that and be honest with ourselves, and we need to make sure that we seek some help. You know, we need to make sure that as a family, as a unit, you all seek help, and do not forget the children. Don't forget the children, and be honest and open, and let the children grieve. Let them express themselves, especially teenagers. When teenagers lose their friends to suicide, they need to talk about it. Because they're going to have questions. They're going to want to know, why did they kill themselves? And they're going to feel a little bit of guilt. What could I have done to prevent it? Or what did I do to cause it? They're going to ask the question, well, was it really suicide? Was it my fault? Or whose fault was it? They may not even know how to feel. They may be numb. And of course, that goes back to what I said earlier. It increases the chance of them wanting to commit suicide. So they may ask the question, can I commit suicide? Or they may say, well, she must have been crazy. He must have been crazy. What happened to people when they die? So now they're dealing with issues of death, life after death. Where did they go? You know, they may even ask the question, well, is suicide a sin? Or they may say, is it wrong for me to feel angry? They may feel angry, you know, and so they're going to ask that question. Should I feel angry, mad at the person because they left them, that they committed, that they took their own life? They are going to have questions. We need to be prepared for this. They may feel guilty, and they may ask the question, why do I feel guilty that this person has done this thing? And they may even go a little further with that and say, why do people have to suffer so much that they want to kill themselves? How can I prevent another suicide? They're going to want to know, well, how can I prevent this? What did I miss? And they may say, okay, well, you know, how many other people have committed suicide? So it's going to open Pandora's box. And so we need to be prepared for such questions. And if you are in leadership, you need to make sure your leaders are prepared for that unexpected phone call, especially pastors and overseers. You need to make sure that your leaders, your elders, your secretary, your administrators are prepared. Make sure that you have training. Make sure that you are prepared. You do not want to be caught off guard because the pastor may not be there. And so you can't tell that person to call back because the pastor's not there. They need to be ready. So the most important thing I want you to remember out of all of this is be ready. Got about 16 minutes left, so I'm going to go ahead and just kind of, just give you my little final thoughts on this, and that is this, basically. To know a person as a survivor is to know of the suicide that has changed their lives, although not necessarily by its details. Some survivors divide life into two segments, before the shadow of death and after the shadow of death, so that a suicide is the definitive moment of their existence. Some survivors weep and wonder their wives into pillows, journals, chat rooms, shot glasses, syringes, pills, work, sex, being busy, and religiosity, seeking relief from the stalking accusations that menace their days, the indication that terrorizes the night. If only I had, perhaps I should have, Some will go to their graves exhausted from the wondering of the why, or the why, from asking what more they could have done or said or been that they would have prevented the upheaval of their narrative. Suicide like is like a tsunami, rearranging the emotional shorelines forever. Suicide alters the stories we tell others about ourselves and the stories that we tell others and the stories that we tell ourselves. Sorrow is a constant companion. A few wonder what kind of husband or wife or mother or father or brother or sister you are and you were if a loved one takes their life. So, remember to make sure that you have a plan. Make sure that you listen to the story without interruption. Remember, do not ask the why. You ask how and when. How often. But do not ask the why. We don't want that person to feel like they are in the judge's seat. Remember that with these kinds of losses, a survivor's grief is so painful that sometimes it is easier to deny that it has ever happened. So we need to be patient and understanding. Sometimes in the denial, denial gives them a break from the pain before the reality sets in. Avoid saying that the suicidal person was not in his or her right mind or was insane or crazy. Don't say that. The majority of people who commit suicide are ambivalent and tormented. Even if a mental disorder is involved, it is up to someone else to determine at a later time. So telling the survivor that the person was insane only creates worry of inheriting mental illness. Suicide is not inherited. Accept the fact that vicious and cruel remarks will sometimes be made, even at church. So we need to make sure that we confront the issues and try to help the originator of those remarks to realize that hurt, the hurt that they have caused someone in grief. We need to be careful, in other words, what I am saying, of what we say out of our mouth. And remember to look for the signs that indicate that this person is depressed and be mindful of those who may have attempted suicide of their anniversary date. Okay, that is all that I have to say, as we have really thoroughly kind of gone through, and just opened up that can of worms, and we have really tackled it. We've pulled up the dirt, we've killed the roots, we have been empowered, we have been enlightened. We have been imparted into, and we have been informed. I'm going to open up the lines and see if there's anyone who has any questions, anything to say. I've got about 10 minutes left on the line. Thank you, caller, area code 419. You are on the air. Welcome to Victory Against All Odds.
Hi, my name is Karen Brankin. I was a social worker for 16 years, and a lot of things that you talk about, I want to piggyback on some of it. Of all the populations that I work with, people that are incarcerated and those who are terminally ill, I found, had the highest rates of suicide. And of when I worked at a local hospice, there was one successful suicide attempt. Now, I saw that coming because there was hopelessness, there was helplessness, and there was also substance abuse. And a lot of times, substance abuse, people who use drugs or alcohol, sometimes people will say, well, it was an accidental overdose. Well, this particular overdose wasn't an accident because this patient actually was a nurse. He was a nurse by trade, and he was, most people know that are on hospice know that if they do something like that, if they have a DNRCC, that's like a, most people that go on hospice programs, that's like they have a court order or a written legal binding document not to resuscitate if you stop breathing or something. So usually if somebody on a hospice program does that, they're successful because rescue people can't come in and do resuscitation. And, you know, it opened up a big can of worms when the family was there and knew that this person had overdosed. And the nurse told me, she's like, well, Karen, they don't understand that he had DNRCC. I was like, well, somebody need to explain that he is and what that is and what it comes. And then it came along with guilt in the family because this could have been prevented because he wanted to, when you go on an inpatient hospice program, you sometimes you get better, you know, stable, but not, you know, better, and then you have to go on a nursing home. He was really pleading for help because he didn't want to do that. He wanted his family to embrace him. But, see, he had burned a lot of bridges because of substance abuse in his family. And, you know, and I try, you know, as you try to reach out to the family to try to get them to embrace the individual and have forgiveness, they don't want to be bothered. So I've seen a lot of the survivor's guilt that you were talking about. And just wondering, was it their fault? They didn't understand. They didn't know he was that bad. And, you know, yeah. And then when you're dealing with people who are incarcerated, that's like a hopelessness and a helplessness, too, because they don't know how long they're going to be locked up. And then you have people in correctional officers, they can't check on you all the time. I mean, and they can't watch you all the time. And, I mean, they don't look at it as treatment. They look, you're in trouble. You in here because you did something wrong. But detention centers and jails, they're actually dumping grounds for places that they don't know what to do with people, especially children. They don't know what to do. They're in the middle of a custody battle and the kid ran away, so they dump them in jail. Or a foster care placement that's not working out. They end up getting dumped in jail. And, you know, a lot of times this is not the child's fault. And so a lot of times these suicides can be successful because corrections officers don't always, they're like police. They're not always trained. They are now getting trained better. But you have to, that's why they have counselors in the jail. And a lot of times the jail wasn't equipped for it, so you had to send them out to a psych ward for their own. And, you know, and so, you know, and you had to contact the parent because the parent had to give consent. And, you know, it's just really, really important in jail because, you know, jail, people look at that, well, they did something wrong, but a lot of times it's a dumping ground for a whole host of problems that's going on, especially in a child's life.
Wow. So here we are in 2012. Do you feel that we still need qualified social workers, psychiatrists, actually working in behind bars, whether it be juvenile detention or maximum security facility?
Especially people on death row, too. I mean, they are at high risk, too, because they felt that they have lost control. I know you probably don't hear about it as much. But a person that's facing death row, you know, they're really risks for doing something because there's a hopelessness and a helplessness.
Right.
You know, everybody that goes to jail is not always guilty.
We have to remember that. Yeah, absolutely.
As a matter of fact, it's funny that you say that, that we talk about this, because the other night I happened to look at the movie with Morgan Freeman. Is it The Shangsha Redemption?
Uh-huh.
And the librarian, the man, the elderly man was a librarian. He had been in jail for 50 years. And when the guy that had gotten incarcerated, who claimed he was innocent, happened to be a tax accountant, and he they found out that he was really good with taxes. He was doing everybody taxes, so he ended up kind of working with the librarian in the library and doing taxes. And so when the librarian's time was up, they released him. He became angry, you know, and tried to kill one of the inmates, thinking that if he did that, that they would keep him. Well, he walked out, and they made that transition in terms of getting him transitional housing, but he just did not know what to do with himself out in the world. So he hung himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and you know, it's funny that you say that too, because homicide and suicide, they kind of go together. You heard of homicidal, suicidal tendencies that kind of
go talked
together.
About it. We talked about homicide, suicide amongst the military, especially now that the military have come home. And, you know, there was just such an influx of suicide, homicide when they first started. But now that, you know, President Obama has, you know, brought just about all of the troops home, we certainly have talked about it. As a matter of fact, it was one of my Memorial Day, it was the Memorial Day service special that we talked about homicide. And then from there, we went straight into suicide. So we picked up, you know, the military again, because we had to include the homicide, suicide portion of that as it related to that particular population of the military, because they have been released again back into society, and they're just, you know, there was no transition. They did not, you know, get any psychiatric help to help them make that transition, you know, as they deal with the PTSD and all of the things that they have experienced and all the things that they went through. And now you're trying to, you know, you put them back into society and they don't know how to deal with it. So it is very interesting that you talk about that, because we, and so, you know, if you have time, you can go back and listen to that particular episode as well, because it is certainly out there. So it's just very timely that you would say that. Well, thank you very much for that conversation. That was, you know, that was a very interesting piece, you know, to go along with that. Those that are incarcerated, I have certainly enjoyed this series. This is one series I have not talked about, but I had to wait until I was released to do so. And so I thank you, Sis Karen, for as I begin to close out this particular series and come off the air, I just wanted to remind everybody that my anniversary actually is on Wednesday, the 27th, where Victory Against All Odds will have been on the air for one full year. I just want to thank each and every one of my listeners, those who have come through, those who have been on the air, and those who have been in the chat room, Dr. Dew, Apostle Shirley Robinson, Apostle Kane, Prophetess Valerie from Empowerment Place, the various Brother Dre, you know, yourself, Prophetess Karen, just so many people have come through at one point in time or another and have just really been a support, my all of my followers. And so I want you to stay tuned, because we will be celebrating. I have to minister Friday, so I won't be able to do it this week, but we will be doing a celebration. During the celebration, I will have each and everyone come, and I don't know the details yet, but once I get the details, we will I will make that announcement, and we will do celebration for Victory Against All Odds' first birthday. So thank you again, Prophetess Karen, and I will, on that note, I will sign off of here, and thank you for tuning in, and all of my listeners, thank you for tuning in this evening. And as I close out, I just want you to know that we have all had some hard challenges in our lives, but I want everyone to know who is listening under the sound of my voice that you do not have to hide your pain. It is possible to walk in freedom and deliverance of suicide. Against all odds, you can walk in victory today. You too can overcome all odds against you, every obstacle that comes to try to block you and keep you bound. Don't be bound any longer. I am here to help you walk in total victory. So tune in weekly so you can begin to gain understanding of those physical and emotional challenges that you are facing for yourself and for your loved ones, your friends, your neighbors, your classmates, your coworkers. Together, we can learn powerful strategic weapons to combat the seemingly unsurmountable obstacles that life can bring and begin the process of healing and forgiveness. Again, my email address is odds_against@yahoo.com. Or you may Facebook me at facebook.com/victoryagainstallodds. That's Victory AAO. Or just Donise Benton, D-O-N-I-S-E. Last name is Benton, B-E-N-T-O-N. Again, I want to say thank you for listening. Thank you for helping me have a successful year, first year. And join me next time at 7:30 right here on Monday on Victory Against All Odds live right here on Blog Talk Radio. You are more than welcome to listen to the entire series, 1 through 4, at your convenience. And until next time, you're listening to Victory Against All Odds. Have a blessed day, and remember to walk in victory. Have a good evening.
You did not wait for me to draw nigh to you, but you clothed yourself in frail humanity. You did not wait for me to cry out to you, but you let me hear your voice calling me.
Great evening.